the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, he's doing it again. Yeah, our fearless leader is smearing a Gold Star family. Mm-hmm. Just when, you know, you think he can't go any lower. MSNBC on one of the shows yesterday played a montage. It was, you know, how low can he go?
He's not a war hero.
He's a war hero.
He's a war
Five
hero.
And a half years
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
Now the poor guy, you got to see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. Oh,
pretty
I
low.
I don't remember.
If you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She probably, maybe she wasn't allowed to have anything to say. You right. Tell me.
You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the I can do anything.
And he went out and bought a big yacht. And he had a very interesting life. I won't go any more than that because you're Boy Scouts, so I'm not going to tell you what he did. Should I tell you? Should I tell you?
They put themselves down as you, and you had some very bad people in that group.
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired!
Yeah, so it was a montage of how low can he go? And he keeps, you know, just when you think you found the basement, you find out there's a sub-basement. And then there's a cellar below that. And then there's a sub-cellar. And he keeps going lower and lower. This time, you know, after Donald Trump, for some weird reason, decided to smear President Obama and all the past presidents by saying, well, they don't call the families of fallen soldiers. Where he gets this stuff from, I don't know. He plucks them out of thin air. He comes up with these ideas. And I guess he thinks either we're not paying attention or nobody's going to fact check him. But he just makes shit up. And says that's real, and stuff that's real he calls fake. It is opposite world. You know what? We haven't gone into opposite world
Everything
in a while.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
So what's going on now? And this story, I think, jumped out at me because it's based down here in South Florida. Frederica Wilson used to be my congresswoman, my congressperson when I lived in Miami. She went with the family of LaDava Johnson to the airport when his flag-draped coffin came home. While they were in the car on their way to the airport, Donald Trump called because, you know, he said he calls all the families of the fallen, which is not true. The Associated Press found at least two families who, you know, have not been called, have not gotten a letter, have not gotten anything. So this guy's just getting caught up. He's tripping over his own lies. But put that aside for a moment. So he's trying to, you know, make up time. And he calls, reaches them in the car on the way to the airport. And, well, here's Frederica Wilson, the congresswoman, talking to Don Lemon on CNN the other night.
Oh, she's very distraught. And
We were in the car together in the limousine headed to meet the body at the airport. So I heard what he said because the phone was on speaker.
What did he say?
Well, basically, he said, well, I guess he knew what he signed up for, but I guess it still hurts.
Unreal.
Hmm.
That's what he said.
The president said to her, he knew what he signed up for.
He knew what he was signing up for.
But when it happens, it hurts anyway.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's almost as if this is a young woman who has two children, who is 6 months pregnant with a third child. She has just lost her husband. She was just told that he cannot have an open casket funeral, which gives her all kinds of nightmares, how his body must look, how his face must look. Mm-hmm. And this is what the president of the United States says to her?
Yes, that's what the president of the United States said to her. Donald Trump, for his part, does what he does so well. He lied about it.
Didn't say what that congresswoman said.
That
Didn't
congresswoman.
She knows it. And she now is not saying it. I did not say what she said. And I'd like her to make the statement again, because I did not say what she said. I had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife.
The woman, the
sounded
wife.
Like a lovely woman. Did not say what the congresswoman said, and most people aren't too surprised to hear
that's
that.
The proof, Mr. President.
Let her make her statement again, and then you'll
she
find out.
That she, that you said this.
Okay, let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out.
And she did make the statement again, because she tweeted it out. She said, I stand by everything I said. And not only that, the woman, the wife, who has a name, by the way, her name is Maisha, spoke to the Washington Post, as did her mother-in-law. Hold on, I've got that Washington Post article here. The lack of empathy is just disgusting. The mother of a soldier killed in an ambush in Africa said Wednesday that President Trump, quote, did disrespect my son with remarks in a condolence telephone call. Sergeant LaDavid T. Johnson's mother, Kawanda Jones Johnson, told the Washington Post that she was present during the call from the White House on Tuesday to Johnson's widow, Maisha Johnson. Just the way that he refers to her as that woman, the wife. These people have names. And one of the criticisms of Maisha Johnson was that the president couldn't even remember her son's name. LaDavid was his name. His mother was present, as was his widow. Johnson's mother also stood by an account of the call from Representative Frederica Wilson that Trump told Johnson's widow that her husband, quote, must have known what he signed up for. Trump tweeted out that it was totally fabricated, what I said to the wife of a soldier who died in action, and I have proof. Sad. Sad. No, you're a sad little ugly man. It's a sorry excuse for a man. This is just sickening. And again, rather than let it go and admit he was wrong, he keeps making it worse and worse and worse. So again, he's disrespecting another Gold Star family. Remember what we went through during the campaign, right around the time of the convention, the Democratic convention, with Khizr Khan and his family. This is a sad, sad little man. I want to share with you one statement from another Gold Star mother. Her name is Karen Meredith. She's also the military families coordinator for Vote Vets. And she put out a graphic and she wrote, Mr. Trump, stop. Please just stop. Your actions and words on this entire matter of the fallen in Niger is disgraceful and unbecoming of a president of the United States and commander in chief. This is not about you. It is about them. It is about all of us who lost our loved ones in war. For once in your life, please stop making everything about you. For once in your life, at least pretend to know what empathy is. For once in your life, at least try to care about other people and their feelings. But he can't, because his whole world revolves around him. He thinks he is the center of the universe. And I guess in the press briefing, I'm looking at Twitter right now, and Mark Knoller of CBS said, Sarah Sanders said that the president's phone call to the Johnson family was, quote, completely respectful and very sympathetic. Media disgrace to portray otherwise. But it's not the media portraying it. It's the family portraying it. Once again, Frederica Wilson, the congresswoman, said the Johnson family was astonished by Trump's remarks during the phone call, which Wilson said she heard via speakerphone while riding in the car with the family. Quote, she was crying the whole time, and when she hung up the phone, she looked at me and said, he didn't even remember his name. That's the hurting part. So just the way you heard Trump refer to Mr. Johnson's mother or wife as the wife, the woman, the wife. Well, no, she had a name. She has a name, and it's Myesha. There's so much else going on, and it sucks that I'm wasting time talking about this, but it just shows that this man lacks a heart. I wonder if he's ever watched The Wizard of Oz, if he only had a heart and courage and a brain. Oh, my. All right. Coming up on the show today, Dana Steele is going to join us again. Now, she was on with me once before, and it was in between Hurricane Harvey, which she went through in Houston, and Hurricane Irma, which we went through here in South Florida. Dana Steele is running for Congress. She's one of many, many women who've stepped up to run as a Democrat, but she's running from Texas's 36th congressional district, a very red district. So this time we'll focus in a little more on the issues, find out what made her run, see if maybe she can pass a little bit of that courage on to perhaps you. We'll see. First, let's check the latest news, and then we'll have Dana Steele coming up too. Stick around.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Senators Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray announced Tuesday that they have reached a deal to fund the cost-sharing subsidies in the Affordable Care Act in exchange for giving states more regulatory flexibility with the law. Word of the agreement came down as the president was speaking to the press in the Rose Garden after a meeting with the prime minister of Greece.
Apparently, Lamar Alexander has said he's made a deal with Senator Patty Murray to stabilize Obamacare. Has the White House been involved in those negotiations, and will you support that deal?
Yes, we have been involved, and this is a short-term deal, and they're fairly close to a short-term solution. The solution will be for about a year or 2 years. And it'll get us over this intermediate hump because we have, as you probably know, we have either have the votes or we're very close to having the votes, and we will get the votes for having really the potential of having great health care in our country. So they are indeed working, but it is a short-term solution so that we don't have this very dangerous little period, including dangerous period for insurance companies, by the way. For a period of 1 year, 2 years, we will have a very good solution, but we're going to have a great solution ultimately for health care. Okay? And they are working together, and I know very much what they're doing. Okay?
As Trump was signaling his support for the deal, others weren't. Some in the House voiced strong opposition, and it's not clear if Mitch McConnell would even bring the measure to the floor or if it would get the needed 60 votes to break a filibuster. Stay tuned. Trump has created a new controversy over the practice of a president calling the families of fallen soldiers. At Monday's press conference, when asked why he hadn't commented about the four soldiers who were killed in action in Niger, Trump responded that he, almost alone among presidents, called the families of slain soldiers.
And earlier you said that President Obama never called the families of fallen soldiers. How can you make that claim?
I don't know if he did. No. I was told that he didn't often, and a lot of presidents don't. They write letters. Lie, I do. Excuse me, Peter.
Lie.
I do a combination of both. Sometimes it's a very difficult thing to do, but I do a combination of both. President Obama, I think, probably did sometimes, and maybe sometimes he didn't. I don't know. That's what I was told. All I can do is ask my generals. Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything. But I like the combination of
I like when I can.
He likes it when he can.
And also
he stirred things up further in a radio interview Tuesday when he brought up his chief of staff, John Kelly, politicizing the death of Kelly's son in Afghanistan in 2010.
Well, they asked me that question, and for the most part, to best of my knowledge, I think I've called every family of somebody that's died, and it's the hardest call to make, and I said it very loud and clear yesterday. The hardest thing for me to do is do that. Now, as far
He's
as
lying
other
again.
Representatives, I don't know. I mean, you could ask General Kelly, did he get a call from Obama? You could ask other people. I don't know what Obama's policy was. I write letters, and I also call. Now, sometimes, you know, if you had a tragic event, with it's very difficult to be able to do that, but I have called, I believe everybody, but certainly I'll use the word virtually everybody, where during the last 9 months something's happened to a soldier. I've called virtually everybody. I've gone to Dover. I've seen what takes place at Dover. It's an incredible scene and very, very sad. One of the saddest things you'll ever see. But I really speak for myself. I'm not speaking for other people. I don't know what Bush did. I don't know what Obama did.
A White House official said Obama didn't call Kelly after his son's death, but didn't say whether he reached out in some other fashion. White House visitor records show Kelly attended a breakfast Obama hosted for Gold Star families 6 months after his son died. A person familiar with the breakfast said the Kelly family sat at Michelle Obama's table. On Tuesday, Trump reportedly called the families of the four soldiers who were killed in Niger. Congresswoman Frederica Wilson of Florida was in the car with the family of Army Sergeant LaDavid Johnson when the president called his widow, Maisha Johnson. Frederica Wilson spoke with CNN.
I heard what he said because the phone was on speaker.
What did he say?
Well, basically he said, I guess he knew what he signed up for, but I guess it still
hurt. Wednesday morning, Trump tweeted, Democrat congresswoman totally fabricated what I said to the wife of a soldier who died in action, and I have proof. Sad. A U.S. district judge in Hawaii blocked the third and latest version of Trump's travel ban on Tuesday, concluding that the president appeared to run afoul of federal immigration law when he issued a proclamation last month restricting travel to the U.S. by citizens of eight countries. A second federal judge, this one in Maryland, early Wednesday issued a second halt on the travel ban, saying Trump's own words showed it was aimed at Muslims. A Justice Department spokesman vowed to appeal. The war of words between Donald Trump and John McCain continues, with Trump responding to McCain's perceived insult from a speech Monday night.
You heard what he said yesterday, Senator McCain.
Yeah, well, I hear it, and people have to be careful because at some point I fight back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm being very nice. I'm being very, very nice. But at some point I fight back, and it won't be pretty.
McCain responded by taking the high road.
I don't comment on what the president says. I comment on what he does. And I will say that I have faced some pretty tough adversaries in the past. I'm not interested in confronting the president. I'm interested in working with the president.
And that's a bit of What's News for Now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, now heard Tuesday through Fridays from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network, I hope you'll consider a contribution. Our work is 100% listener-funded, and I can't do it without you. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right. For a little bit more of what's going on in the news, we check in with our friends at the Talk Media News Service. They're at TalkMediaNews.com, and Doug Christian is on the line. Hey, Doug.
Hi, Nicole. How are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there. I'm so disgusted by this man. He just makes my blood boil. Every day it's something else. When you think he can't go any lower, he shows that, you know, we haven't hit rock bottom yet.
June 9th, 1954. Have you no sense of decency?
Right. Well, you know, there was Whoopi Goldberg started a rant.
All I can say is, have you no shame, sir?
Have you no shame, sir? She went off on him. Not that I watched The View, but I watched this clip online because she went ballistic. I mean, the man has no empathy. He has no couth, as it were. He has no understanding of how to talk to people with any bit of sympathy or empathy or humanity.
It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for our entire country. I actually went to Section 60 of Arlington National Cemetery. I've been there several times. And the Gold Star families oftentimes visit their loved ones there. And so there's always a small community that's based around there. And it's just breathtakingly moving. And I just think that somebody could just make any kind of joke like he did to the widow and say, well, I guess, you know, almost cynical statement. Well, he knew what he was signing up for. No, he didn't. He was a patriot who gave his life, and be grateful for that.
That's right.
And
he just,
it's
he just doesn't get it.
Sickening.
Yep.
It is absolutely, this is not about partisanship. This is not about right versus left. That is left for another day. But this is, has got to be about what we are as a nation and who we are. And I think at this time, the supporters, his supporters, especially evangelicals, have to say, wait a minute.
You would think, but the evangelicals stand by him. I guess the thought of tax cuts for the rich among them is too attractive. And the thought of, you know, overturning Roe v. Wade just gets them off or something.
Well, it's I mean, this is something that somebody, they're going to have to answer to for their short-term trade. And a devil's bargain is what this is.
Yeah.
And it's sickening. It's absolutely, it's just appalling, actually. And I'm just hopeful that that eventually we'll get over our slumber and wake up to just the, it's not absurd anymore. It's revolting.
Some of us have. And I guess, you know, one of the stories you have today is that Democrats lead the Republicans by 14 points in a generic 2018 ballot. You know, maybe people are finally, you know, waking up and seeing what we've done, or I should say what they've done, because I had no part in it.
Yeah. Well, in fact, that there is, I mean, that is, that's the key right there. The reason the Republican Party has sold its soul for this is because they feel that they're somehow going to get a legislative agenda done.
Mm-hmm.
But if they find that they lose power because they did this, maybe that is a lesson, at least for this generation, that you have to have principle. That you can't just reside on what you think is going to be a false win.
I hope so. I hope so. Well, we'll see. I mean, look, the 2018 elections are still just over a year away, so a lot can happen in a year. But if it keeps going in this trend, the Democrats should take back both houses of Congress, and, well, we'll see what happens. That's if we make it far.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, and, you know, that's no laughing matter. I mean, he's a very spontaneous person who could just decide unilaterally to launch World War III, as Corker had said.
Yeah.
Now, the fact is that, you know, a landslide is considered 5-point lead.
Wow.
And so 14 points is more than a landslide.
That's a triple landslide.
And Real Politics poll came out, and they were the Democrats were 9 points ahead in general.
I'll take it.
That still is, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah. So that's, I mean, maybe that's what it's going to take for people to wake up and say, look, this is unacceptable. And this is not about, again, right or left. This is about what, as a country, who we are as people.
And, you got that right. And
it's a very different, yeah.
Yep. So I want to ask you about yesterday we heard that the Lamont Alexander and Patty Murray reached a deal on a fix for the Affordable Care Act for the cost sharing reductions. Trump reacted immediately very positively. Then he walked it back. Mark Short in his office said, oh, no, we're not going to do anything that shores up Obamacare. And they keep going back and forth on it. Is this thing going to happen or what's the status on it today?
Who knows?
Yeah.
The thing about Donald Trump is he's not an ideologue. He's an opportunist, and so he always crowdsources his views, and those views become his opinion, and that opinion lasts for about 5 minutes until somebody contradicts him, and then he goes that direction, and that's what he's done here. He's kind of said, okay, this will rescue the insurance market. Well, I was against it yesterday, but now I'm for it. Well, now it'll be again. I mean, who knows what he will do?
Mm-hmm.
The question is that those who are suffering or could suffer, it's just heartbreaking because these are the most, the most needy people, but it's not just the most needy people that could suffer. It's the entire insurance market that would suffer with this kind of disruption and unpredictability. And so, I mean, if there's one thing that insurance markets need, is they need a sense of direction of where this thing is going.
Of stability.
And
there is none.
Exactly.
Yep.
And there is none. And it's and of course, I mean, a question that I asked my Republican brethren is, if you are not for insuring all people, then what's the point of having insurance? I mean, the point is that we all need insurance at some point or other in our lives. And that's what this attempt was for, which was, by the way, this whole structure was put together by the Heritage Foundation.
Yes,
originally.
It was. Yes, it was. It's a Republican plan, just like Romney Care in Massachusetts. But because it's got Obama's name on it, and it's not even officially on it. I wish that's why I call it the Affordable Care Act. People need to stop calling it Obamacare. Let's call it Trump Care now, because he owns it now, especially if he's killing off the cost sharing reductions and killing off the exchanges. It is now Trump Care. So we need to stop calling it Obamacare.
And he took out his menu book, that big leather book that you see for, that holds a menu for a restaurant, and then holds it open with that goofy grin of his, you know, saying, oh, look what I did. I'm the greatest thing ever in healthcare. I'm thinking, well, people are going to die for this.
Yep.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just appalling. I mean, this is about. And also, governing isn't necessarily the most sexy thing in the world. Oftentimes, it's just boring. It's getting your numbers straight. But it's got to be done, and it's got to be done right. And this is just nonsense to have this kind of excitement over things that really could hurt people in the end.
Oh, yeah. And this is where he is. And I don't even know that it's so much excitement. It's just he goes from one extreme to the next, you know, in a matter of minutes. You know, he'll have one position and then he'll have another entirely opposite position. It's just opposite world. He has no backbone for anything. He doesn't stand for anything.
Not one thing. The only thing he stands for, the only thing he cares about is his poll numbers. And his perception in the media.
Yeah,
and,
well, I'm surprised he hasn't reacted to his drop in Forbes, you know, richest Americans list more loudly and declared it fake news. Or maybe that's what his tweet about magazines was, about newspapers and magazines with fake news. And he's discounting Forbes' list of the richest Americans.
It's so. Again, I mean, I grew up with some very, very wealthy people, and they spent all their time trying to give away their wealth, like really so that they would die almost at a balance, and just making the world a better place.
If they need any help,
true wealth.
If they need any help, I'll volunteer.
Yeah,
I'm happy to take some of it off their hands. Because, you know, I'm going to have to figure out how to get health insurance next year.
Well, I know. You and me both. I mean, this is ridiculous. But we all, in the end, will suffer from pre-existing conditions. It's just a matter of when.
Yep.
And, you know.
All right. Okay. Doug Christian from the Talk Media News Service, talkmedianews.com. Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Nicole.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
You bet.
All right. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to speak with a woman who is running for Congress. Yes, from Texas. She's running to be the first Congresswoman from Texas's 36th district. Dana Steele will join us next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler. It's NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Corporate bosses are working up a big surprise for workers. I'll tell you about it today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. There's a robot in your future, but not one of those cute little labor-saving automatons like a Roomba vacuum cleaner. Far from saving you from doing extra labor, this new wave of robots is being brought into your workplace to rescue corporate bosses from paying you to work for them. Oh, you might think, not my workplace, for I'm not a factory worker. I've got a college degree and I work with my brain. So no contraption doing rote mechanical tasks can take my job. But wait, these are thinking machines implanted with complex neural networks and super-fast algorithmic computers that operate in sync, functioning much like the cluster of specialized cells in the human brain. These brainy bots have a fast-evolving ability to watch, listen, and learn on their own, even able to produce and teach other robots. Not only are they displacing flesh-and-blood workers on factory assembly lines, but millions of them are now being moved into professional, managerial, creative, and other occupations previously assumed to be the secure domains of higher-educated, higher-paid people, maybe even you. To be clear, it's not robots that are taking our jobs, but corporate profiteers. They're creating a robot economy in order to displace you and me with inexpensive machines that don't demand higher wages or health care, don't take sick days or vacations, and don't organize unions, file lawsuits, or vote for pro-worker politicians. It's to be a plutocratic utopia designed by and for the corporate elite, and they're pushing it hard and fast, hoping we the people don't wake up until it's too late. This is Jim Hightower saying, robots are not our enemy. The corporate bosses, bankers, and BSers who own robots are the ones doing this to us. And now is the time for all of us, whom they're about to discard, to rebel against their socially destructive greed.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back. Nicole Sandler here, and I'm excited for my next guest because I got to speak with Dana Steele once before. It was a month or so ago. Dana is a radio and TV personality, an entrepreneur, a speaker, and the Democratic candidate running to be the first congresswoman for Texas Congressional District 36. Now, we did speak briefly in the few days between Hurricane Harvey, which affected her in Houston, and Hurricane Irma, which affected us down here in South Florida, but I thought we needed more time. So, Dana, welcome back to the show.
It's so nice to be on the show when neither one of us is evacuating.
Yes. What a concept. Although I have a feeling that you're still a little more in cleanup mode than we are, at least where I'm at in Florida. Hurricane Irma was a huge storm and it enveloped the entire state. But we got lucky where I'm at, where, I mean, we had a lot of downed trees and branches and it was a mess. A lot of people lost power. It was ugly, but we had nowhere near, at least where I live, the devastation that you guys had in Houston. How are things there? Because you've kind of disappeared off the front pages.
Oh, boy, haven't we? You know, it's getting better. It's just it's a huge economic mess right now. A lot of people having a hard time with FEMA, the Red Cross, the SBA. We were fortunate enough that we had enough coverage that we didn't need FEMA, but we applied for the SBA loan. And that's been such a, as we say in Texas, goat rope, that I finally just told the SBA yesterday, keep your money. I'll go to the bank. The interest rate is only, 0.2% higher, and I don't have to worry about, you know, all the hoops. And I just, Nicole, I've been through this before with Ike. I knew what to do. I had a foot of water in my house, and I just, you know, poured a glass of Chardonnay, put my feet up, started filing for insurance, FEMA and SBA. But there's so many people here who don't know what to do. So many people that are being denied help from the Red Cross, being denied help from FEMA. And then we've had Irma and Maria and Puerto Rico and the fires. So it's making it harder and harder for people to get their insurance money, their FEMA money. And you know what the one thing is that's holding up my SBA money is I don't have a canceled check. I'm like, I haven't had a checkbook for 10 years. Well, they're like, well, you need to find one and you need to fax it to us.
I'm like, no.
What's the fax? And that's what they're doing to people in Puerto Rico.
That's
I watched
right.
them do it those first few weeks here after Harvey, they wanted people at the shelters to fax in 56 pages of information. It was like, what? And now they want people to fax information in Puerto Rico.
Right, or go online and fill out forms. Yes. Right, when they have no power, no internet, no telephone, no nothing.
Right.
Go online.
We, you know what? We're making the best of it. A good example is I do a thing called Dana in a Diner every Saturday morning. We go to a diner somewhere in the district, and we just kind of hang out and have coffee and talk to people. And somebody reached out to me a few days ago and said, can you walk me through what I should be doing with FEMA? And I'm like, well, it's not really my job, but I'm sort of a de facto expert. So I tell you what, we'll do Dana at a Diner at this diner near you, and I'll post it on Facebook. And if anybody wants to come join us, again, I'm not an expert, but I can tell you what I did, and we can all try to help each other. So, you know, it's the power of people, and that's pretty much what we're having to rely on. I go back to Puerto Rico. These poor folks. It's just stunning what's happening to them.
It's despicable what's happening to them. And to hear, you know, the orange guy keep talking about how he's doing such a great job down there and everybody's doing great. And they're thanking him for the great job he's doing. He makes it all about him. This is the recurring theme here. It's all about Trump. Instead of, you know, realizing that people are really hurting, they're drinking contaminated water from Superfund sites. They're breaking in to tap wells that are contaminated. That's how dire things are. That's how desperate people are. And the president will not admit it. I wanted to ask you, though, in Houston, I know there's like pollution from leaking plants and stuff. What's the situation with the water there?
We're drinking from Superfund sites.
Are you?
And didn't even know it. I think that the scariest term I heard was the Washington Post referred to the Gulf of Mexico and Galveston Bay as a toxic gumbo.
Oh, God.
We had those explosions at the Arkema plant.
Right.
Fortunately, our wonderful district attorney in Harris County, Kim Ogg, said enough is enough, and she has insisted on a federal investigation of Arkema to find out what they're hiding, what went out into the air, what exploded. We've got Superfund sites that are leaking. The EPA, and when the EPA says it's bad, Nicole, you know it's bad because they're not doing anything right
now. Right, this EPA for sure.
Right, and this EPA said, oh my gosh, your dioxins are 2,300 times higher than they should be. So I'm trying to tell people for the next couple of years, you don't want to eat shrimp from the Gulf of Mexico. You don't want to eat oysters from the Gulf of Mexico. And everyone's just ignoring it.
Wow.
But we have a huge, huge problem with pollution down here. And it's one of the things I keep explaining to people in the district. In fact, I'm up in Liberty, Texas right now, which is part of my district. Just met with the mayor, who's of a like mind, which is nice to run into somebody like that, that we're not going to bring big business to Texas if we are allowing people to pollute the water and pollute the air. And we have that stupid bathroom bill and, you know, the list goes on. But you look at what's happening in some place like Flint, Michigan.
Mm.
People, there's still not safe water to drink.
Nope.
And now it's happening down here, and everybody's going about their business like it's just fine because it's oil and gas, it's petrochemical, it's a huge part of our area, it's a huge part of our economy. But I think people are finally, like me, I'm not afraid to speak up and say, we can't have this. This is not right.
Now, Dana Steele, again, is with us. I didn't realize, a fifth-generation Texan, third-generation Houstonian. So you're dug in there. This is your home. Texas is not known for being the most liberal, you know, bluest state out there. How are you finding it so far running as a Democrat?
I am finding people that have been hiding for years are discovering it's okay to say I'm a Democrat. I had an open house the night before Harvey, before we knew what was coming. I had a meet and greet at my house, and it was so much fun, Nicole, because neighbors were coming in, and we put it on the Nextdoor app, beer and wine, come on by after work, come meet, you have a candidate for Congress running as a Democrat, and neighbors were running into each other in my living room that lived across the street from each other going, I didn't know you were one too. People are coming out of the shadows, and that's becoming a part of my campaign. It's, don't be afraid. I am going to stand up for you. Come stand behind me.
Wow. Now, people know you in Houston because you spent, I don't want to put a year on it, but many years on the radio. You were known as the First Lady of Houston on KLOL, where you played rock and roll on the radio for most of your adult life, right?
Yes, and I give thanks every day that there were no cell phone cameras then.
Yeah, back in the old day, because I come from the same world, you know, before there were cameras, now we're on YouTube. I never understood why people want to watch someone talk on the radio, but they do. But radio, when radio was radio, when we actually played records before, you know, before CDs even, before everything was digital and you just press a button on the computer, and there were no cameras in the studio.
Oh, and thank goodness. There were no cameras anywhere. I just had a fundraiser the other night that Earl Flick, who played for David Bowie for 30 years,
sure.
He's a dear friend, and he flew in from New York to play the gig for me with a heavy metal band that's pretty popular called Galactic Cowboys, and they're out of Houston. So they put together some fun, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Rolling Stones, that sort of thing, and played for the night. And he's always saying, steal. There's no, we didn't take pictures of each other back then. We don't have pictures. You know, Slick played with John Lennon. He doesn't have any pictures with
wow.
John Lennon.
Oh, just, no.
Nobody took pictures back then the way we do now. But that's one of the reasons I decided to run, Nicole, is, I kept getting together with all my friends for, like, these bitch sessions of what is going on. And then Trump got elected, and it just started getting crazier and crazier. And we kept saying the only way we can turn Southeast Texas blue is we've got to find somebody with name identification, because nobody even ran. No Democrat ran against the incumbent last time. And I said, that's not democracy.
Nope.
That's not how this is supposed to be. But no real people can run for office anymore. And, so it was my husband, my friends, fans, followers going, we got to find somebody. And all eyes started looking at me because I've got name identification.
Right.
And once he got elected, it was like, well, heck, if he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and exactly. So anybody can. And one thing we're noticing, and I know you speak to Howie Klein as well. Howie's a regular. He's on with me every Thursday. And he's talked about your district, which is very, very red. But there are more women running in 2018 already than probably ever before. Women running as Democrats, you know, jumping in the race. I think a lot of people were inspired to do something after Trump got into office, because, you know, sitting around and not doing something, it makes you feel a little hopeless, I think.
I tell people you can only sit around and bitch on Facebook so much, and then you have to get up and do something. And it just seemed like, you know what, I've got great name identification. Even the most redneck of Trump voters in Southeast Texas, when they hear my voice and they hear my name, they grew up listening to me. They will turn around. I don't know if you're familiar with Pete Olson. He's a Republican in the Congress, very right wing, very conservative. But he grew up listening to me. Even he stops dead in his tracks and gives me a hug. And so they will at least talk to me, Nicole. They'll mm-hmm. discover that a liberal, a Democrat, isn't an ogre, isn't a monster, doesn't have three heads, isn't going to eat their children. So we decided, you know, let's take the fact that they will let me in their homes. They will shake my hand. They will sit down in a diner and talk to me. And it's going to be hard. It's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of grassroots. And it's going to take a little bit of showbiz, which is what I bring to it. I'm sitting in my – I bought a dual cab – not dual cab, I'm learning to say it right – a quad cab Dodge Ram pickup truck. This is the biggest damn truck I've ever been in. And we just had it wrapped, so it's got my giant face and the U.S. Constitution, We the People, on it.
Uh-huh.
And we're just driving the district and shaking hands and getting out there and meeting people. And I think that takes me back to the original question, which is, it's bringing people out of the shadows. I was in a parade this morning here in Liberty, and you know, so some people started to cheer. And that's what I'm trying to do, is let people know it's okay to say, I'm going to vote for a Democrat. I've had enough of this hate, this hateful rhetoric, this, you know, there's another phrase here in Texas called culling the herd, which is when you, you know, you need to thin the herd. You need to kill some of the herd. It's all part of the you know, the process. Nature culls the herd. This is not nature. It's like they're trying to kill off people with this health care plan.
Oh, my God. You know, my insurance is through Obamacare. That's the only reason I was able to get insurance over the last few years, because, you know, once you reach a certain age, you have a pre-existing condition, and I've got a few. Well, last summer, I was diagnosed with lung cancer. And
oh my.
So, right. So Obamacare saved my life. I got really lucky, knocking on wood laminate here, that we caught it very early. So I had surgery, removed the lower lobe of my left lung and a wedge out of the upper lobe. And I just had my latest scan last week and got the results yesterday, and I'm cancer free. But I'm supposed to have CAT scans now, again, in 6 months. My doctor feels good enough that we can do them every 6 months. But I said to him, well, hopefully I will have insurance next year, because this might have been my last scan, because they're going to make it unaffordable for me. So, you know.
Right. And if you had asked me 2 years ago, even as you know, then that's not that far away. If you'd asked me 2 years ago, I would have said, you know, we need to fix Obamacare, but I don't believe in Medicare for all. I have totally turned the corner on that. I think that's the only thing that's going to save this country as far as health care, is we've got to get these preventative measures in place. And people say, well, I don't want to have to pay for it. You are paying for
it. That's
right. You're paying for it in welfare that people can't work, and you're paying for it when people go to the emergency room and can't pay their bills. If I denied health care to my kids, I would go to jail.
That's
instead,
right.
What do? I make sure my kids and my husband go in there and get that checkup. Preventative is so much cheaper than sick. And we don't have health care in this country anymore. We have sick care. I had a doctor point something out to me that I thought was so representative of what's happening. He said, look, when they start putting up a new subdivision, a new neighborhood, what are the first things they start to build? Well, they have to build, usually by law, they have to have a school, depending on how many houses they're putting in. Usually a strip center of some sort starts going up. Maybe a grocery store company starts to break ground. But he goes, every single time a new neighborhood starts to be built, one of the first things they start building is a medical center and doctor's offices, because they know it's going to be another lucrative population. And that was scary to me, because I was like, he's right. I started looking at all this construction throughout the district and up and down 45 and 59, the highways. And if you look where there's actually new neighborhoods going in or any sort of new residential construction, you will see right next to it, there is a new medical center. And it's because they know it's not health care, it's sick care.
Right. And everybody at some point is going to need to see a doctor. Everybody at some point is going to need to go to the doctor. Everybody is going to get sick. And especially if you don't have preventative care.
And they're, you know, and now they're trying to profit, make a profit, profitize education.
Of course they
are.
And
we've already proven it doesn't work in war with the military. You know, that's why we stay at war for 26 years. That stuff's damn lucrative, especially if you own the companies or stock in these companies. Now we've done it with healthcare. We're killing off people. Look at this story the last 48 hours on opioid abuse.
Oh, my.
It was created by the drug distribution companies. And now they're trying to do the same thing with education, with this voucher thing. And once they privatize education and make it for profit, you know, forget about it. So, again, hashtag why I run. I just decided I needed to step up and do something. And everybody has told me, oh, you can't do it. It's a machine. There's a process. This entire government was created for the people, by the people. And I think we need to take back the process. And I see it happening. I see it happening everywhere.
So how
it's great to see it.
I'm glad to hear it's going well. I know one of the biggest complaints I hear from candidates running is it's a lot of dialing for dollars. You have to raise a lot of money. How's that going? How's the fundraising going?
You know, there was a little 7-week blip called Harvey.
Yes.
Two days before Harvey, we had a team meeting, and I said, I'm expecting 3 feet of water in my house. I've been through this. I'm putting the campaign on hold. I'm turning the website into a resources site, and I thought it would be that way for a couple of weeks. Instead, I ended up with a team of people on my Facebook and my Twitter and my website. We ran rescue, then recovery, then rebuilding 24/7 for 6 weeks.
Wow.
And I just switched it back to a campaign page last week. With that said, people have stepped up and been, I've got friends around the country like you, like Howie Klein, Michael Okuda, who was one of the graphic artists for 30 years on Star Trek. He's a huge fan. He's really been pushing people, his fans around the country to donate. And then I made a few phone calls. So I broke 100 grand for this quarter, which is
nice.
Really, really good.
Especially with the hurricane.
It's not going to win a race against the Koch brothers. But I, you know what? I want so badly to get elected and get in so that I can change this from the inside. Most people don't realize that Democrats and Republicans alike, they vote on bills at night because Monday through Friday, 10 to 4, they are in an office building across the street because they can't do it legally from their offices.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go to a separate office building, and they sit in cubicles with their call manager, and they call for money all day, every day. If you want to serve on a committee, I think the Ways and Means Committee is the most expensive. You have to raise $1 million for the head of the Ways and Means Committee. You don't get put on a committee in Congress or the Senate because you're smart or you're an expert or you have contacts and a network that can make things work. You get put on these committees because you raised a certain amount of money. And that's not how this is going to save our country.
No, not at all. So I'm guessing campaign finance reform might be one of your big big subjects.
And term limits. This does not need to be a career for people. It needs to be, you know, every couple of terms or so, we have a revolving door so we get new new brains in there and new ideas. And we have got to do something about the fact that these offices are just bought and paid for. The Republican I'm running against, he's, as Orange Man would say, he's bigly supported by oil and gas, petrochemical, and insurance, health insurance companies and insurance companies. And he quit the Freedom Caucus because they weren't conservative enough.
Oh, my.
Like, what?
Oh, my. And how long has he been, how long has he held that office?
He's in his second term. So he'll be going for his third term. He's also the one that said sometimes a lady needs to be told when she's being nasty.
Oh, my.
Excuse me?
Oh, my.
Excuse me?
You know, you have some really good progressives in Texas. Beto O'Rourke, who is now, you know, he, like you, believes in term limits. And so he's served, I guess this was his second term, and now he's challenging Ted Cruz for the Senate. Do you know Beto?
Beto is not only a rock star, he's a former punk rocker.
Yes.
And I was on the phone with his people yesterday. We're talking about doing a tour together with maybe taking, you know, some musicians out with us and I'll be his opening act. And no, we're very much aligned. I love Beto. I had an opportunity to do a private meeting with him and about 11 or 12 veterans.
Wow.
In a closed door meeting about 2 weeks before Harvey. And he just listened, and he would get so excited. He would go, let me write that down. That would be a great idea for a bill. And we talked about the fact that most people don't realize many of our enlisted men and women are encouraged by the U.S. military to apply for food stamps.
Hmm.
They're on food stamps. He didn't even realize that, so he's writing this down. But I just loved how he's going around Texas, and he's having, you know, he's having these meet and greets at beer gardens and union halls. But he's also having these private meetings where he's just sitting down and listening to people of on all subjects. And I'm really inspired and sort of taking a page out of his book. So, yes, I know Beto. I love Beto. I would be honored to be on the same ballot with Beto.
Oh, that'd
He's
be
an
great.
Amazing guy.
That'd be great. Now, Houston does have one Democratic congressman, right? Al Green represents part of Houston, doesn't he?
Yes, he's the one who just, didn't he just file the articles of impeachment?
Yes, he did.
Trump?
Yes, he did. So is it just gerrymandered?
Al is a piece of work, but he's a great guy. He really cares about people.
So is it gerrymandered? So he gets the Democratic votes and then your district gets all the Republicans?
Oh, it's crazy gerrymandered. I have 731,000 people in my district, and it's a district that's bigger than Connecticut.
Wow.
It's got more people than Seattle and Denver. It's huge. I would be the congresswoman for the Klan. How's that?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Vider. Thank you. So it's going to be an interesting race.
It sounds that way. So, but you still got a ways to go. I mean, this is early, but this is when you have to be in it to get started, to raise the money, to do all the legwork. And it sounds like you're doing the district in your truck. I love you. Still up on your website, you've got the graphic from the fundraiser you did, the Rock the 36. So you're capitalizing on
I need to get that down, don't I? Yeah, so we're doing some rock shows. We, you know, people say to me every once in a while, somebody will say to me, you know, they try to put me in a pantsuit or, you know, God forbid, a dress. You know what? I'm in blue jeans and cowboy boots and have been for probably 35 years. And I will worry about the dress code when I get there.
Right. Well, you know, Patty Murray, her whole thing was what, the tennis shoes? She wore a mom outfit and tennis shoes, and she became a senator from Washington State. You know, you got to be who you are. And I think that's, you know, I think that's why people are coming out to see you, because you're genuine. So, you know, we lost a great from the world of rock and roll. Sadly, the day of the Las Vegas shooting, we also lost Tom Petty. And I know you have a Tom Petty story, don't you?
I do. I just remember it was I can't remember which album it was, but I was flown out to Universal Studios in California with a few other people to interview Tom before he did a private performance for Record Radio that night. And then they took us all to ride some rides, but we had to go underground. And it's just one of those true rock and roll moments where, you know, Tom was feeling no pain. He may have been smoking a little. And we kept getting lost in the tunnels. And he just kept turning around to me and smiling and saying, "Have you seen Spinal Tap?" and then a few minutes later, he would forget he had asked me, and we would take another wrong turn, and he'd turn around and he'd crack himself up, and he'd go, "Have you seen Spinal Tap?" Uh-oh. I'll just always remember this mischievous little laugh and that Tom Petty voice, and then he would forget, and 2 minutes later, he would say it again. So,
oh, that's
but he
funny.
Was just, and I did have a chance to do an interview with him, with all the traveling Wilburys, and that was... That's one of those things where I couldn't even really tell you because it was like an out-of-body experience to be sitting there in that greatness talking. And they were all joking and laughing and fun people. It just felt like I lost a friend. Did I know him? No. Did I hang out with him? Yeah, a couple of times. But I was a rock and roll DJ for 22 years, and he was one of the icons that I interviewed and played in the 80s. And to hear that he's kind of like one of the first of that era to go and to go so young.
Yeah. No, that was a shocker. Yeah. I got to interview Tom Petty once, and one of my favorite pictures is us and my dog, Sandy, who used to come into the station with me. So I got me, Tom, and Sandy. So I was happy.
He was just a good guy
who
was doing something that he found a passion for as a child, and that passion never changed. And I always, you know, I'm always kind of jealous of people who have known what they've wanted to do since they were 11 years old and never wavered. And you know, he was a happy man, and he was content with his music. Good for him.
Yep. And he was a good progressive, too, I believe. Anyway, Dana Steele running for Congress from Texas 36. The website is Dana Steele, Dana with a Y, Steele with an E, DanaSteele36.com. And you can find Dana on Twitter at Dana Steele. Thank you so much, Dana. Best of luck, and we'll stay in touch.
All right, sounds good. Give Howie a hug for me.
Will do. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dana Steele, everyone.